The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
To the Eric Metaxas Show.
I'm the announcer, and I've known Eric since he was a big nobody.
In fact, I'm one of the people he stepped on as he climbed the ladder of success.
And now my former friend, Eric Metaxas.
Folks, welcome to Hour 2. You know how you can tell it's Hour 2? Because it usually comes after Hour 1. Please write that down. It could be important. I'm going to be speaking to Kirk Cameron in a second, but Albin and I want to remind you before we talk, you know, to the Hollywood megastar Kirk Cameron, that we have something important to say too, okay? Us non-Hollywood types. And it is simply this. If you give money to the Alliance Defending Freedom through our website, metaxastalk.com, or with the phone number, there's all kinds of stuff that you get that we want to thank you, okay? But we have a special thing that's this weekend only. And it is, if you give $1,000, you'll get a raft of stuff. Plus, Albin is going to shave his beard off on the air. Albin, is this going to be a dry shave?
It's going to be a dry shave.
Like in Rambo First Blood? No, this is going to be. But the point is, I want people to remember that we will give you credit for his beard being shaved off. We want to do that, folks. Okay. Enough nonsense. Go to metaxastalk.com and give anything. But if you give $1,000, it's this weekend only. Next week, we're shaving the beard and you're going to become a star. Just like my friend Kirk Cameron. Here he is. Welcome, Kirk.
Hey, you know, I think what you need to do is you need to save Albin's beard hair, and then you need to like raffle that off as another prize.
You know what? We're going to mail that. We want to mail Albin's facial hair to you, our brothers and sisters in Christ, radio listeners. We don't care where you're coming from theologically, but we want to do something productive with Albin's beard.
It's got to give 10,000, though.
It's been in his family for generations, and now we want it to be part of your family. Kirk Cameron, we've got some important stuff to talk about, my friend. First of all, how you doing? I love to see you.
I'm doing great. Thank you. I'm out here in California. An interesting place to live these days, as I know New York is too, but we're excited for this weekend.
It's horrifying to think that there's feces on the sidewalk of the great state of California, and that Nancy Pelosi and Newsom, they're not doing anything about it because they live in their gated non-feces communities. But let's talk about something positive. You, my friend, have been really involved in the battle for religious liberty. Talk about what is happening literally this weekend, this Sunday.
Well, we are putting on an event called Non-Essential. Obviously, that's a play on words. Here in the state of California, for those of you who live elsewhere, listen, we still can't go inside of our churches. You're not allowed inside of your schools or a gym or even inside restaurants. And yet you see people rioting outside. You see them burning down buildings, defunding the police. You're able to go inside big box stores. And you start to realize that the narrative is falling apart about all this safety stuff. And then you look at the CDC numbers and you find that the curve has been flattened. And you wonder, why are we all still in this lockdown state like it's a communist state of California or something? And so a few of us are getting together to say, enough. We are essential. Our Christian values are essential. Our faith and our families and our votes are essential. And so Dinesh D'Souza, Charlie Kirk, myself, Sissy Graham, Danny Gokey, and Pastor Jack Hibbs and Rob McCoy and others, we're coming together for an incredible evening, Sunday, 8:00 Eastern, to talk about the reality of what's happening in our nation and then bring solutions to the table that will help us turn our country around.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Now, am I part of the program?
Well,
am I Eric, part of like as an MC or something like that? Listen, you guys can't afford me. Let's move on. Here's
right.
The issue. I want my audience because I think
guys with bow ties.
I think, first of all, Jack Hibbs is a hero. Rob McCoy's a hero. There are a lot of folks out there in the churches that are. They're doing the heroic thing. You know, this is what I talk about in all my biographies, especially in Bonhoeffer. I mean, to do the thing that is risky and dangerous. But when you use the word non-essential, I just want to be really clear. The government in places like California have deemed churches and religious gatherings non-essential. They have said that in Nevada, that in Las Vegas, the casinos are essential. The liquor stores are essential. Pot stores are essential. Churches are non-essential. This is the narrative that we have to fight against, that we have an entire secular leadership culture, the cultural elites, especially in places like California, completely out of touch with middle America, which considers gathering to worship utterly essential.
Absolutely, Eric. Don't you and I and everyone who's listening on this conversation understand that faith and morality are the most essential things that exist in our nation? I mean, you taught me this. This golden triangle of faith, virtue, or morality, and liberty. And without faith and without virtue, we can't have liberty. We'll destroy it. And that's what we see, the loss of liberty, because we're losing faith and we're losing morality. And so assembling in a church is absolutely essential. And I have friends in Idaho who went outside the church so that they could sing Amazing Grace in four-part harmonies while holding their hymnals outside City Hall, and they got arrested.
This is what I'm saying. Like, there are people, when I talk about the Alliance Defending Freedom and all this kind of stuff, I know there are people thinking, oh, it's fear mongering. Oh, relax. Folks, Kirk Cameron is telling you his friends in Iowa were arrested in Iowa, not in Manhattan, not in San Francisco, in Iowa. That's how out of touch our local state and federal officials are when it comes to religious liberty. I mean, it's like you're making it up. You're not making that up.
Yeah, no, I'm not making it up. It was up in Idaho, and you can look it up. Check out Idaho worshipers arrested. And incidentally, that was just a month or two after other protests were outside of the police office shouting to defund the police, and nothing happened to them. So you realize that the narrative is falling apart. What's going on? That's why we're doing non-essential. Please go to nonessential.live to check it out and RSVP, get all of the information. It's going to be incredible.
Nonessential.live. Now, there's no hyphen, right? Nonessential.live. And if you go to nonessential.live, you can participate. If you can get to Chino Hills, California by 5 o'clock Pacific time, maybe you can actually participate in person. I wish I could do that. I'd love to be with you and Jack Hibbs and everyone you've mentioned. You know I would. But if you cannot get to Chino Hills, California, folks, go to nonessential.live. That's the URL. That's it, right?
That's it. Nonessential.live.
Nonessential.live. I just want to say that, you know, if people don't fight back, when I hear this kind of stuff, that the way people are able to, you know, to say defund the police and you're able to protest, nobody gets arrested. But then when you sing Amazing Grace or something like that, I mean, we're not making this up. This is happening. This shows the absurd bias of our leaders. And by the way, here's the issue. If it was like a vanilla versus chocolate bias, you could say, well, that's their point of view. This is unconstitutional. That's why we must fight for every American. This is not about Christians. This is about right and wrong, constitutional versus unconstitutional. So I want to make that clear, folks, that this is not just about Christians standing up for Christians. On the other hand, it wouldn't be a bad idea right now, since standing up for Christians is to stand up for liberty for all.
That's right.
Kirk, you will be there in person. Is that right? Can people really, if they're in California, they can actually attend this if there's room in the building?
Yep, there's going to be 2,500 of us inside of the church, which, of course, this is going against the governor's edicts. But we will be there in person. We hope that the volume of the praise and worship just blows the roof off of this church, and we want that to go out to the rest of the nation. So, we'll be there in person, all of us together in the same room. We're taking off the masks of fear and shame, and we're speaking to one another in hymns and psalms and spiritual songs, singing and making music in our hearts to the Lord. And that's what we need to be doing more of in this country.
Okay, listen, most people can't get to Chino Hills on Sunday, but ladies and gentlemen, you can go to nonessential.live. Please go to nonessential.live. I will, of course, be preaching at a church in El Paso, Texas. Next weekend, I'll be preaching at a church in San Jose, California. I love it. I love what you're doing, Kirk, to get the word out. You're living your faith, my friend. Thank you very much. God bless you.
Eric, you're a hero of mine. God bless you. Thanks for having me on the program.
Hey there, folks. Welcome. This is the Eric Metaxas Show. When John Zmirak recommends that we have someone on the program, we drop everything and we grab that person, kidnap them if we must to get them on the program. That's what I think of John Zmirak. And so today we have George Neumeyer as our guest. He's a contributing editor to the American Spectator. He's the author of many books, The Political Pope, How Pope Francis is Delighting the Liberal Left and Abandoning Conservatives. His new book, I'm excited to talk to him about, is called The Biden Deception. Brand new book, The Biden Deception, Moderate Opportunist or the Democrats' Crypto-Socialist. George Neumeyer, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
You realize that if John Zmirak recommends you, you're like unto a god. So we're just going to be listening as to a Delphic oracle here. But in all seriousness, what has exploded across the news in the last week regarding Biden is so disturbing. So this is particularly timely. What is it that led you to write the book, The Biden Deception?
Well, I wanted to debunk the misconception that Biden is a harmless moderate, which the media has been peddling for quite some time. And, you know, the reality is that Biden has been an opportunist, you know, over his entire career. You know, wherever the party goes, he follows it. So in the 1990s, when the party was triangulating the Republicans under Bill Clinton, he sponsored the crime bill and posed as a moderate and as a tough law and order guy. He was even very critical of the war on drugs for not being sufficiently tough. So back then he was a moderate, or presented himself as a moderate, because that's where the party was under Bill Clinton. But as the party moved to the left, farther and farther to the left, he followed the party to the left. And now he is essentially a Bernie Sanders style Democrat. And so I wanted to write a book that would expose that and warn people that a Biden presidency would combine the worst of the Obama years with the worst of the present day Democratic Party that is now captive to AOC and Bernie Sanders.
Now, it's one of the reasons I'm excited to talk to you, because I think many people are up in the air about that. It seems to me that there's no question that if he were elected, we would see a nightmare unleashed on the country, because I think that he doesn't have the ability, just as Nancy Pelosi didn't have the ability, to stand against the radical younger left members in that party. They just don't have it in them. And when I say they don't have it in them, part of that has to do with their lack of courage. They don't have political courage. So if they have to go along, they'll go along. And that's what we've seen Nancy Pelosi do. But you're telling us that in his core, Biden himself is not opposed to some of these radical left ideas like open borders or, treating communist China as an ally rather than a foe. I mean, this is horrifying, but that's evidently what you say in your book.
Right. You know, Biden doesn't really have an intellectual bone in his body, but to the extent that he thinks about political and moral philosophy, his thoughts run in a leftward direction, and they always have. The reason I call him a crypto-socialist is that his philosophy of taxation is basically that the government should redistribute wealth. You know, he said that the purpose of taxation is to spread the wealth around. Well, that's not the traditional American understanding of taxation. Taxation exists for the purpose of financing the legitimate functions of the federal government. And any taking of money that exceeds that need, in the traditional view, would constitute a form of theft. But under the socialist understanding of things, which Biden has always subscribed to, taxation is really just an extension of what the Democrats would call social justice. And so that's just one example of how his philosophizing, to the extent that it exists at all, lends itself much more to liberalism than to any kind of moderation.
I guess, at this point, when I think about Biden, I also think about somebody who would be China's best friend and therefore America's worst enemy. In other words, he seems to be such an opportunist that he turns a blind eye to anything that, for example, Trump has dramatically, courageously stood against China and their trade policies. And you kind of feel like we haven't had presidents that we haven't had anybody with the courage to do that. Trump does that. But it seems like Biden would be a return, a dramatic return to people who would appease the worst of China and who would, in a sense, say, well, we can get some money off of this, or we can get some benefits off of this, or I can get some benefits off of this, or my family can get some benefits off of this. That seems to be his pattern.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he's been an apologist for China, not only in terms of China's economic policies, which he's always championed. You know, he was fighting for most favored trade status for China back when the Democrats were against that in the 1990s. Back then, he was for that. But even with respect to China's moral practices, Biden has been an apologist. For example, he went over to China during the Obama years, and he endorsed the China's repressive population control measures. He said he fully understood China's one child policy. So that shows the depth of his defense of China, that he'd go so far as to endorse the one child policy of the Beijing communists. And so, we're going to go from a president who stood up to the communists of Beijing to a president who bows to them.
It's horrifying. And we know that many conservatives were also pushing for most favored nation status. And I think there's two kinds of ignorance that played into that. One is ignorance of evil. The other is the idea that the free market is some kind of a god, that the free market is going to naturally give us freedom, which, of course, it is simply nonsense. And you, as a Catholic Christian, understand that. What about the tax cuts? It seems like Biden has made it really clear that he's going to repeal the Trump tax cuts. What would that mean to the average American? It seems to me that the media has effectively hidden this, because this is a big news that I'm going to raise taxes.
Oh, yeah. He said it something like 10 times. He said, the very first thing he will do as president is repeal the Trump tax cut. And he hasn't said that he's going to repeal part of the Trump tax cut. He has said that he's going to repeal the Trump tax cut. And, Mike Pence pointed this out correctly in the debate with Kamala Harris, that, the promise is a blanket promise to repeal the whole Trump tax cut, which means that the people most hurt by that will be the middle class, because they were the primary beneficiaries of the Trump tax cut. And so when Biden says, only people making over $400,000 will get hit with a tax hike, he's lying, unless he plans on only eliminating part of the Trump tax cut. But if he fulfills his promise to repeal the Trump tax cut, the middle class will be hit the hardest.
I guess it must be particularly galling for you as a sincere Catholic Christian to see Biden dare to call himself a Catholic.
Oh yeah, I mean it's a gigantic fraud, and which he has been pushing for years. He's sort of a poor man's Ted Kennedy, in the sense that he advertises his Catholicism on the one hand, and then votes against it consistently on the other. He stands against these weak-kneed liberal bishops who are making excuses for Biden and saying that a vote for Biden is acceptable. They always talk about one issue, but the reality is that Biden stands against church teaching on multiple issues. He's in favor of embryonic stem cell research. He's in favor, as far as I can tell, of euthanasia. He has officiated at a gay wedding. So, you know,
now that just takes the cake. The idea. Now, look, I don't have a problem with people officiating at gay weddings if they want to. But the idea that somebody who says I am a Christian and that they would do that, it's mind boggling to me. And the one thing I'm always teasing our friend John Smirek about is I say, like, look, here's the one thing that you Catholics have that we evangelicals don't. You have the ability to publicly and officially rebuke someone who's doing something like that. Why are no U.S. bishops doing that? It's a staggering thing to me.
I think the fundamental reason for their silence is that they agree with Joe Biden's version of Catholicism. You know, most of these bishops don't support the traditional teachings of the church either, you know. Does anybody really think that, you know, these liberal bishops support the church's teaching on contraception? No. So that's why they don't care about Biden reimposing a contraceptive mandate.
Well, look, this goes a little bit beyond contraception, but you're right. We're going to continue the conversation, folks. I'm talking to George Neumeyer, many books out, but the brand new book is called The Biden Deception. Don't go away. Folks, we're talking to the author of The Biden Deception, a brand new book by George Neumeyer. George, you were just saying that many of the bishops, the Catholic bishops in America, don't publicly say anything against Joe Biden, who has very dramatically and publicly embraced and promoted anti-Catholic, anti-Christian policies, is because they themselves don't really care. But how many bishops are there in America? I mean, the idea that you don't have a few of them speaking out more publicly, I don't understand how that's supposed to work.
Well, it just speaks to the lack of faith amongst the bishops. When the bishops become faithless, Catholic politicians become faithless too. And so the Catholic pro-abortion problem, you know, which we've been fighting with for decades now, that goes really all the way back to JFK. That's really a byproduct of the faithlessness of the bishops. You know, the bishops didn't take the moral teachings of the church and don't take the moral teachings of the church seriously. And consequently, Catholic politicians like Joe Biden don't take it seriously either. And they never receive any rebuke. They never receive any correction. And I would say the reason for that is that the bishops and Biden share the same politics. They're both politically liberal, and I would say they also share the same dissenting Catholicism. You know, most of these bishops don't support the church's teaching on contraception. They kind of weakly support the church's teaching on abortion. They don't particularly care if the contraceptive mandate under Obamacare is reimposed. And so, you know, the only people who are really fighting for religious liberty in the church are the people who take religion seriously. It's only if you take religion seriously will you take religious liberty seriously and suppressions of it seriously. And so I think that, you know, and Pope Francis, of course, his politics and his moral views align with Joe Biden's, you know, not perfectly, but sufficiently to explain why there's this deafening silence from the Vatican about Joe Biden.
Well, it's horrifying to me. I know that there are so many faithful Catholic Christians that I have known and that I have had the privilege to speak with, and I know that they're grieved that at the state of the church at this point, that you don't have bishops and priests speaking out more publicly against someone like a Joe Biden. Because listen, Joe Biden can believe whatever he wants, but the idea that he believes these things and then says, I'm a Catholic, I just think, I don't know how you get to say that. I am way more Catholic than Joe Biden, and I don't go around saying that I'm a Catholic. So it's very strange to me. What do you think of Biden the man? In other words, at this point, do you think that he is capable of governing, or do you think that in effect he would be treated as a cardboard cutout with people behind him manipulating things?
Yeah, there is no question that he is weakening and that he's lost his mental edge. This was a problem first identified not by Republicans, but by Democrats last year during the run-up to the primaries, when people like Cory Booker and Andrea Mitchell commented on Biden's lack of sharpness. So yeah, there's no question that he is on the downhill slope of dementia. And that will, I'm pretty sure that is going to result in a Kamala Harris presidency. He's going to hand off the presidency to Kamala Harris as his condition deteriorates. But before that happens, he will serve as a tool of the radical left. He will defer to their wishes and to their demands. And, you know, a Biden administration is going to be chock-a-block full of Bernie Sanders acolytes and AOC acolytes and, I can't remember her name now. One of his assistants is a former Bernie Sanders aide. I'm blanking on her name, but she's the prototype of the person who will enter the Biden administration. And we all know that personnel is policy. So the more radicals you bring into your administration and scatter across the federal agencies, the more radical the results will be of that government.
Is he, do you suppose that he is scared that if he doesn't tack left publicly as he's been doing, that he will lose the Bernie supporters, the real radicals?
Well, you know, I think he's made sure that they weren't going to act up by selecting Kamala Harris as his running mate. You know, he could have selected somebody much more moderate, but instead he chose the most liberal member of the U.S. Senate. And somebody whose positions are as left or are as far left as AOC's or Bernie Sanders. I mean, just look at her position on bailing rioters out of jail. You know, she tweeted out that people should send money to bail rioters out of jail. This is the person who's running with Joe Biden. And they're both at this point subscribers to the Black Lives Matter ideology, which is explicitly anti-American and socialist and secularist in its most extreme form, you know, that seeks to destroy the traditional family. And they haven't said a word against BLM.
It's impossible almost to be believed that this is the man the Democrats have chosen to represent him, and even more difficult to believe that many people will vote for him. I mean, it's one thing to put McGovern up and then to have a Nixon landslide, but to think that we would have anything less than a Trump landslide with someone like this running against him is horrifying. It's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on just to talk about it. We'll be right back. Final segment, talking to George Neumeier. The book is The Biden Deception. Brand new book. Get a copy. The Biden Deception.
They're going to make a big star out of me.
I'd rather have Jesus than civil.
Folks, I'm talking to the author of a brand new book, The Biden Deception. His name is George Neumeier. He comes recommended by John Zmirak. You know what that means. We want to talk to that guy. George, I've enjoyed speaking with you. We haven't touched on just a couple of issues with regard to Biden. He seems to have made very serious deals with people like AOC, and Beto O'Rourke. These are people who Beto O'Rourke has been very clear. He wants to take away everybody's guns. It's a stunning thing. AOC and others have promoted the so-called Green New Deal, which when I first heard it, I thought this is the most preposterous thing I've ever heard. And yet there are people like the man running for president willing to go along with it. It seems like pure madness and a recipe for socialism.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's Biden has made it clear that, radicalism will dictate the policies and the personnel of his administration. you know, he established that working group with Bernie Sanders, that Unity Task Force, and it produced a manifesto that, you know, that reads like something that Karl Marx himself could have written. And, you know, he makes, it's you know, yeah, as you point out, he has said that he wants to make Beto O'Rourke his gun czar and Elizabeth Warren his Treasury Secretary. So we can expect Beto O'Rourke to come for our guns and Elizabeth Warren to come for our money. And then he's talked about making John Kerry and AOC climate change czars of sorts. So, you know, we're looking down the barrel of the most radical administration in the history of this country. And, you know, it's we're going to be living under a left-wing dystopia for, you know, potentially a very long time.
Yes, that's unfortunately a fact, which is why I've been so vocal in supporting the president's reelection. I just don't think people understand what's at stake. It's that simple. In other words, you can despise Donald Trump, fine. But if you do not reelect him, do you have any idea, ladies and gentlemen, what is going to happen? We're hearing it now from George Neumeier, who's written a brand new book on Joe Biden, The Biden Deception. It's not, you know, these aren't the Democrats of 20 years ago. This is something that we have never seen. And because people seem to hate Trump, they seem to think, well, we don't care. What could be worse than Donald Trump? Well, unfortunately, you might find out.
Yeah, I think we're going to look back. If Trump gets voted out, it's going to be sort of like the British getting rid of Winston Churchill after he won World War II. I mean, I'm not drawing any strict parallels between the two men. Obviously, you know, Trump has
Churchill
his
was
issues.
A drinker.
But the fact is that, you know, if you exclude COVID from your analysis, we basically had 4 years of peace and prosperity. And that's one of the things I don't understand is that we've had 4 years of peace. You know, there have been no major foreign policy conflicts, no major terrorist attacks. But, you know, Trump has been faithful to his promise to keep us out of stupid wars and stupid conflicts. That should count for something, you know, when evaluating a president. You know, has this person kept our country at peace? And Trump has. So I really, you know, to me, this is a choice between common sense, which Trump in his own way represents, and the other choice is the path that leads towards a left-wing dystopia, one that the founding fathers, you know, of our country would not be able to recognize as American. And it's to me, the choice could not be easier or clearer.
Well, the most important thing to remember is that Corn Pop was a bad dude. That's the most important. That's the clearest that Biden has been on any subject, I think. And we need to just remember Corn Pop was indeed a bad dude. Your book has just been out a few weeks now, but I'm so glad you wrote it for such a time as this. This is not, I think that the mainstream media's inability, unwillingness to put the tough questions to Biden could destroy the nation. And we need to speak up simply about who he is, which you have done in this book, The Biden Deception. You know, you talk about how he wants to remake America. People forget he was the one who pushed President Obama to recognize same-sex marriage.
Right.
Joe Biden, the Catholic, he was the one. And you never hear anybody mention that.
That's right. You know, he got into trouble with the Obama people. They said he had gotten out ahead of his skis on the gay marriage issue. And so, yeah, that's, you know, it's funny, you know, he was supposedly brought into the Obama administration to serve as a check on Obama's radicalism. Instead, he served as a stimulant of it. And I point out in the book that he's gone way past even the kind of conventional LGBT position. He's now a huge supporter of transgenderism, and he wants to turn all public schools into, you know, little laboratories of transgenderism and get as many kids coming out as transgender as possible. And he's going to impose that, you know, that'll be a test, I think, on anybody who wants to interact with the federal government, you know, whether or not they accept transgenderism. And so we're going to see just an unprecedented assault on religious liberty under Biden. You know, it'll make the Obama years seem tame by comparison.
That's a very dramatic statement. The idea that that he would want to push the transgender ideology. I mean, it seems that it has no real world consequences for him. He doesn't have any grandkids or anybody that are going to be having to deal with this, or he doesn't care. But it just seems to me that, you know, God forbid that he would get elected. It's truly horrifying to me. And as I hear you, you know, run it down, it sounds even worse than I feared. What is your sense of what this election will bring? Do you think America will reelect the president or not?
If I had to, you know, predict today what's going to happen, I would say that Biden, unfortunately, will win. And his administration will be the final installment of that fundamental transformation of the country, which Obama started and promised. And I think, you know, unfortunately, we are, you know, very rapidly moving in the direction of becoming a political society that is not based on constitutional principles, but is based upon left-wing tyranny.
I'm really sorry to agree, but George Neumeier, that's no thanks to folks like you who are speaking up. I want to thank you for being my guest. Thank you for the Biden deception. Congratulations on the book. And since we're Christians, we know there's something called the power of prayer. Many people listening to this program understand we need to pray for this nation, act and pray and vote. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Folks, before we go for the day, I wanted to do a little justice to the memory of my very, very dear friend, Thomas Howard, the brilliant author and teacher. His book, Chancer the Dance, I count as certainly one of the best books of the 20th century. It's like a book that C.S. Lewis wrote. And by the way, Tom Howard met C.S. Lewis, my goodness. John Zmirak, I was just hoping that you and I could talk for a bit about Tom Howard. What an amazing man.
I got to know Tom Howard.
It's hard for me to believe he's gone. I interviewed him for Socrates in the City about his book, Chance of the Dance. People can go to SocratesInTheCity.com and get the book, Chance of the Dance. I wrote a new foreword to it where I talk about what I'd love to talk about now if we had the time, but we don't. But what about you?
Well, I loved his book, Chance of the Dance. Also his book, The Secret of New York Revealed, which is a memoir of living in the 60s and 70s in New York and watching the liberals take the city, you remember, from Breakfast to Tiffany's and turn it into Taxi Driver. How did that happen? This book shows how that happened.
Okay, now, I'm not kidding. The only reason that book exists is because of your friend, Eric Metaxas. I was having a conversation with Tom Howard probably 15 years ago, and in passing, in the conversation, he says to me, yeah, I wrote a book after Chance of the Dance, and I thought it was as good, or I really thought it was one of my best books, but it was never published. And I just did like one of those double takes, like, what? You, Tom Howard, wrote a book that you think is one of your best books and it was never published? And I got angry even at him. I said, Tom, you can't let it not be published. Where is this book? Oh, he says, I think my daughter Gallaudet maybe has it in a trunk in North Dakota. I'm not sure. I insisted that he find that manuscript. I begged him to have it published. It was published by Ignatius, and it's called Secrets of New York Revealed. Thank you for reminding me, because that's one of my proudest things in life. I had that conversation with him, and I just got angry. I said, you've got to publish this book.
I have a short, funny story about Tom Howard.
Go ahead.
We brought him to speak a couple of times when I taught at Thomas More College in New Hampshire. And once he was giving a talk on Brideshead Revisited, and both my beagles were there, and one of them, Franz Josef, a pudgy little beagle, toddles up to the front, turns around, and faces the audience so it looks like a debate between Thomas Howard and my beagle, Franzi. And at one point, Franzi starts yawning and scratching his ear as if he is winning the debate handily. And Tom was such a gentleman in this appalling situation that I did nothing to rectify because it was so funny. I was in the back taking pictures of it. And I will post the picture on Twitter of Thomas Howard debating Franz Josef in his honor today.
I mean, I know you're not making this up because you've told me the story before.
I had to make it up to Tom for doing this to him. I sent him the complete DVD series of Jeeves and Wooster, and that kind of...
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, I just want to say, because we're at the end of the hour, but anything he wrote is extraordinary. But his book, Chance of the Dance, takes the cake. And I just want to say, people, it's very literary, and it is utterly brilliant. But there's so much that he has done. But when I hear you say that he gave a lecture on Brideshead Revisited, I want to know, were these lectures, he gave so many lectures on T.S. Eliot's four quartets, were they recorded? These are treasures. I would do anything to get those things publicized. I'm going to have to look into it. I'll talk to his son. We are out of time. I'm grateful to God for my friend Tom Howard, for his life and his writings. And John, I'm grateful to you for being my guest roughly once a week. We are truly blessed. Folks, thank you for listening. Our website is metaxastalk.com. We do need you to help us by going to ADF and giving on that website, metaxastalk.com. You see the banner for ADF. We desperately need your help. Give anything you can, please. Thank you.